And I love Connect because it's now an opportunity to bring pharmacies staff back together, get an opportunity out there to learn, you know, what businesses are out there, what's going to be able to help those pharmacies grow, what's going to be able to help those pharmacies stay alive and compete with the bigger corporations.
I'm so happy I came to Connect this year to see everyone in person. And I've learned so much about social media just in the very first day. If you're not here, you're missing out.
It's great to be amongst all of our pharmacy cohorts and brainstorm and network and collaborate, get ideas to keep us motivated.
What I love about Connect so far is just seeing everybody around that I know are top performers in independent community pharmacy, using Pioneers, their platform, which is such a great clinical use tool for community pharmacies, and I'm excited to learn more.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Catalyst Pharmacy Podcast. Today, we sat down with Kathy Campbell, the CEO of Medicap Pharmacy in Owosso, Oklahoma, and she's also the CEO of Dr. Kathy Health. She's also got a book out, actually, one of the first published authors we've had on the podcast, which is really cool. The book is called Obesity, The Modern Famine. We get into the podcast, obviously, about that, about the book, the journey of it, what's in it, what can people take away from it. It was really cool. I think she, I'm going to butcher this a little bit, but she wrote it in such a way where she's like, it's for patients, but cited like it's peer reviewed. So, which is really cool. So worth a look, worth a read. She's also a Connect speaker. She's going to be at Connect, talking through like pharmacy-led weight management, what she's doing in her pharmacy for pharmacy-led weight management and lifestyle management, what supplements she leans into. She's really big on evidence-based supplements that she's leaning into. And then we also get into just like operationalizing and what she's working on in the pharmacy itself, like what strategic initiatives they're working on in the pharmacy. So really good podcast, and we'll take you there now. Thanks.
I wrote you an intro, Kathy. Thank you for being back on. And I kind of wrote it, but I bullet pointed out what you do. How about that? CEO of Dr. Kathy Health, CEO of Medicap Pharmacy in Owosso, Oklahoma. If people don't know where that is nationally, folks, that is outside of Tulsa, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
North. Yep.
It's timely. Probably my first published author on the podcast as well. Obesity, the modern famine. I've got the book here. Everyone go get it. It's wherever you can buy a book. It will be there. We'll talk a little bit about that. She's also has a fantastic TED talk, with like 30,000 views or something like that on that thing on YouTube. So, really cool. She's also a board member. I think you're still a board member of ACPE, which I believe is the accreditation body for pharmacy education.
Yeah, I just took that on. So I actually will officially be this in June. So that's a new gig for me.
Okay, cool. So yes, that is, and she does so much around the industry. You've probably seen her in some way, maybe a shape or form, if you're trying to stay up with things around, I'll just say, a pharmacy-led approach to... I'll say either weight management or lifestyle, either or both. And then obviously she's still super adept and running her pharmacy as well, and on the chemistry side of things of the house as well. So kind of a really like multi-pronged, multifaceted approach to patient management. So that ado, like I think everyone knows you for the most part, but can you start with a little bit about, we don't have to go into the full story because it is a great story. And I do have a question that I read in the book that I think it's a good indicator of how fun the book can be. But you have a really cool story starting out too and getting into pharmacy and then into this kind of pharmacy led, I'll say weight management and lifestyle journey.
Sounds great. Okay. I'm up for it.
Okay, cool. So I read it, there's a spot in the book where I think you advocate for patients or even if you're not a patient reading the book, anybody reading the book to have a pretty wild goal.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to ask you about your wild goal. I think it was involved twerking. If you could explain it for the group, we don't want to leave it there. That is a weird soundbite. But if you want to explain it for the audience, I think it's a great story.
I got it. No, it is. It's you know, as funny as that is, it's a long game for me.
Yeah.
And that makes it a very clear destination. And yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So for some of you folks, I think she has a goal. You have a goal of what, being 90 at a embarrassing your daughter or embarrassing your granddaughter? Is that?
Yeah. Embarrassing my daughter. My daughter's the one that doesn't think I can dance. And she's like, Mom, I'll come to you for most things, but not to learn how to dance. So, and I can dance. I got great rhythm. I was in band. Okay. I mean, I have musicality. And so I've decided my long-term goal is to embarrass her at her daughter's wedding.
Okay.
By twerking in the middle of the dance floor. So we'll go over that.
Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Well, I want to like go ahead and get into it, I guess, from that side of things.
Yeah, let's do this.
The book just came out. It's great. So before we get too much into that, the book journey, what's that been like? This has been like a labor of love, I think, for a long, long time.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Give us some insight there as to what that's like.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I started it after the TED Talk, and I thought it was a piece of the puzzle. I really thought it was about, you know, just leveraging my point of view out in the world, because my point of view has seemed to help a lot of people.
Okay.
And I thought, well, this is a natural next thing to do. 2019 is when I started that, and, you know, I've learned along the way I can do nothing at the pharmacy. Nothing else but pharmacy at the pharmacy. So okay. I have a coffee shop nearby, and so I would go and torture myself trying to get it out of me. That was very challenging. Just dump it, all the different things. And I had some coaching for that. And then we had a pandemic.
Yeah.
And I got a little distracted. And then I had two daughters that were launching in life. They were graduating or they were in high school when the pandemic happened. And one graduated in 2020, which means she didn't graduate in 2020. There was no graduation or celebration. And she went on to college. So those are incredibly challenging times, not to mention trying to keep my community safe and healthy. And I started approaching it from a fortification standpoint. I thought we've got to fortify our bodies so that we can deal with this virus. And that was not the approach most medical practitioners took.
Okay.
So that was distracting. And all the while, I've got this book hanging out there. So it has been a journey. It's still a journey. Trust me, throwing it out there into the world and telling, it's like thinking out loud. It's like, do you want people to know what's going on in there most of the time? It's very humbling. It's very, it's an interesting, vulnerable. It's very vulnerable to throw a book out in the world.
Right.
That's how I feel.
I imagine. So yeah, I'm sure after a bunch of revisions, it is out now. It is, it's available. It's a great, I'm reading it right now. I'm probably in the first quarter of it. So I wanted to get further through it before you got on, but, great read. That story I think is a great, your story about like, hey, this is my goal to embarrass my daughter is a really cool element of like, that's kind of stuff. Great science-based like approach to explaining obesity and tools, culture of how to fix it. But also there's a lot of just like, I'll just say some humor and storytelling woven in too to make it super fun. So I just wanted to commend you. Great, great book, great read.
Thank you.
Even editorial wise, I was looking at some of the reviews from like real people like, that are paid to do that kind of thing. And I was just like, dude, she's killing it out here. So good stuff.
Well, and you know, we had a book signing party here at the pharmacy, which was just a little love fest. They just came and it was so cool.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't trust you guys to tell me this thing stinks. You know, I don't. And so I'm starting to see people who don't know me actually read the book and the content of the book stand on its own. And they're getting a lot out of it. And so that's where that, oh my God, a validation of, like I said, it's an emotional, vulnerable thing. But what I'm hearing is it's a good read. It's an easy read.
Yeah.
It's you can consume the content, but there's a lot in it. there's a lot in it. So people are like, I'm using it more as a workbook.
Yeah, it's a lot of data too, right? I just was surprised at how much data is in that book. So you're right. You could totally use it as a workbook or something to reference to a lot, or to even to pull out of and make tables if you're on a journey there. So great.
Well, I told people I wrote it for my patients, but I cited it for my peers.
Okay.
So if a pharmacist really looked at it, they could create solutions based on the data, right?
Okay.
So that was my game, is I want to lay it out there. It's like, guys, we're not helping people with some really critical pieces. And if you just kind of think about it a little differently, you can do it. You can create solutions. And that's really what business is creating solutions.
Okay. Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about, okay, let's go back into the pharmacy a little. With this pharmacy led approach of lifestyle and weight management, I guess when someone is going, hey, look, I'm trying to figure out how to offer this, or this is becoming more and more important as a way of either diversifying revenue, protecting yourself from just from that perspective, but also a holistic approach to patient care. So when pharmacists are approaching you with, man, how do I even get into this? How do I start? Where do I start? What's your advice?
You know, that's a great question. It is the question. Uh-huh. It's part of what I'm going to be addressing with my talks this year, because the doing and the product is not what's keeping us from doing it, right? Because, okay. I mean, we have a new supplement shop in town that just put a new business model for supplements. So it's not that it's not a viable business model, right? It's why isn't pharmacy stepping up and becoming the expert and the reliable and branding that? And I think it's a psychological issue.
Okay.
It's a structural issue. And part of what I'll say is the three biggest obstacles is, I think, our identity, who we think we are as a profession and who we think we are as a pharmacist. And what we do within that identity. So one of the things I never, ever, ever saw my role as, I never saw my role as a dispensing pharmacist. I always saw my role as a healthcare provider first.
Okay.
And healthcare is not how many pills can I fill as quickly as possible. It is how do I get the best health for my patients? Okay. So my identity was not wrapped up in the pill.
Okay.
My identity was wrapped up in the solution.
Got it.
Okay. And as I started seeing patients that weren't getting better with the pills, I was like, okay, what are we missing? What are we missing here? And so I started putting in some of the missing pieces. And it worked. I think the identity of who are you? And what do you do within that? Now, I can change that. But if my staff still sees their identity as coming into the pharmacy and spending all their time processing prescriptions and all their time filling, and we're judging the success of our pharmacy based on volume,
okay,
or script count, then we're still within this other identity. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. Yeah.
Okay.
That was where I was leading to. So from there, you've changed your mind. You've changed your point of view. How do you get that down to your staff level and making sure everybody's bought in? There's a little bit of change management, I imagine, that has to happen.
Yeah.
That. And I'm sure you probably came in with some radical ideas and folks were like, you sure? Are you sure about this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is it's funny because about every 9 months, 12 months over the last 20 years, I'll come in and I'll completely move the workflow around. And they're like, how do I? I'm like, yeah, you got to think differently. I got to get you to think different. I got to be more efficient on the prescription side. So no longer are you guys got all this room to spread out. We're going to do it very efficiently. So that's the second component that I'll be talking about. First is identity. Second is inertia.
Okay.
Just the inertia of our day, the inertia and you have to find a way, you know, a body in movement will stay in movement, right?
Right.
So you have to actually create obstacles to that inertia in a loving but impactful way. It is change management. But that inertia, I think, is a huge part of pharmacies' barriers to initiating anything. And to be honest, cash flow inertia.
Oof.
Having enough cash in the bank, it feels like you're churning over here. You can't let this ball drop on dispensing. And I'm sure I'm not the only pharmacist that ran her pharmacy bank on if we had money in the bank that day, And when the answer was no too many times, I was like, okay, I got to do something different. And so managing the inertia of our day and that's, to be honest, Mark, those are challenges with health too.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, dude, just the inertia of like hitting the drive-through every day or something like that. It's just easy. Yeah. It's easy. It's what you know. You're going to get the same thing every time, yada, yada, yada. Like there's real, you're 100% right. There is real inertia and habit breaking or whatever you want to call it, or a culture, I think sometimes you use the word of getting out of that frame of mind.
Part of what I do in my program, it is about helping people. They come to me because they know they need help changing the inertia. Mm-hmm. They need help figuring out how to do something else. And it's not what to do. I mean, we've all got these incredibly powerful computers at the end of our fingers.
Right.
That you got more information there on what to do than humans have ever had. That's not where the game is. The game is how you do it. And that's where actually the third. So I'm giving you my talk here. Identity, inertia, and the last one is isolation.
Okay.
That's a problem. That's a problem with changing our model and stepping into something new. I'm not an independent pharmacy. For most of my existence, I've been an isolated pharmacy.
Okay.
Right?
Say more.
I've been, I'm an introvert, and I want to take care of people. And I had this nice little practice where people came to me and asked for me for help. Right. And I felt good about that.
Okay.
But as the model changed, I realized that I had to get help and I had to start shifting from isolation, shifting from independent to interdependent. Okay. And so, people like Pioneer Connect and people like NCPA and people like nutritionists that I work with and collaborate with to expand and to educate the conversation about the value of the pharmacist in their life. And then I actually had to market. That's probably one of the least utilized way that pharmacy becomes less isolated is to actually market our value. And trust me, we don't do that well. Our profession has been hijacked by people who do that better.
Okay.
Business people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You just said that you talked about a supplement shop down the road, right?
Like, they're going to come in and market.
Half their game is that, right?
So. Yeah. They're going to actually craft in the consumer's mind value, right? Now, I don't know if that, I don't know what their strategy is. They're going to do money value, cheap value. Well, I learned a while back that if I wanted to craft the narrative of what my consumer thought about, I was going to do expertise and I was going to leverage that you don't want anybody else helping you with supplements because they don't know what I know.
Right.
Right. And they don't have that expertise. And to be honest, integrity and trustworthiness like pharmacist. And so that's part of my initiative as far as marketing. But, I back it up. That's who I am. It's who all pharmacists are. We just don't tell people about it. And that's, I think, a weakness in our profession. And it's also a weakness in our business acumen.
Yeah, I would say a lot of the folks, you're making me think about other folks who have been on the podcast that I feel like do that well. They do that well, though. They have the conversation. They have the open dialogue with the patient, either at the counter or maybe in a marketing format as well. But they're not afraid. Scott just talked about that, actually, about, I think, helping patients with like prescriptive authority around certain things like birth control and things like that. He's like, you just have to say it. You just have to be like, you're coming at it from, and you create those little interactions. Every time they've asked you for help, you're there. You're building the trust. Makes total sense, actually, what you're saying. I love that. So I want to stay on that a little bit. You've kind of crafted a really nice, I think, approach to that supplement piece to making sure patients are getting what they need into their bodies based on your book. But tell me a little bit about that too, with kind of operations and staff and footprint in the pharmacy itself, if you can, a little bit there about, like, if you're thinking about, man, I really want to push this into my pharmacy, you know, where'd you create the room headspace wise and footprint wise, you think?
Well, I think it began because I was reading science. I was reading nutritional science back in the late 90s.
Okay.
And I was actually also getting my non-traditional PharmD. And so I actually did some of my research around omega-3s and managing cholesterol with omega-3s. I did some research with that. And it was like, and the science was there. So I'm very science informed. I'm not creating, you know, I'm not selling snake oil here. I am reading and leveraging and understanding the foundational science. And it just made sense to me that I would make these recommendations if my goal was my patients' outcomes to be the best and them to live a rockin' life, right? Sure. So I started recommending omega-3s 20 years ago. I started recommending vitamin D 20 years ago because it clinically made sense.
Okay.
So that was the first thing. And what I know about pharmacists, at least myself, is if I'm not clinically confident, mm-hmm. I won't do it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I have to be confident in the clinical approach. So I was. And so with every conversation, with every consultation at the register, right at the register, when right. I'm talking about the statin or I'm talking about the metformin they just got, I would make recommendations to... See, that prescription informs me a lot about the clinical condition of the patient. So if they're giving a new onset metformin, I know that they're in a pre-diabetic state. I know likely the research says they're low in magnesium. So I ask them, do you have leg cramps? And they're like, have you been watching me?
Right. What are you doing?
I'm like, well, do me a favor. Try this for one bottle and let me see if it makes a difference. I'm really concerned that your magnesium may be low and that often manifests as leg cramps. And the muscle I most worry about cramping is the one in the middle of your chest. Okay. Mm. And so they go, okay. Yeah. And so I give them this magnesium, the specific forms that I have vetted. And they come back in and they're mad at me because they got to buy it every month because it works so daggum good, right? And they're getting such good sleep. And so those kind of successes not only fed on the success of my clinical recommendation, they felt better, blood work was better, they operated better. And so it really, for me, started when I was consulting at the register about a medication, okay? So that... There's a foundational nutrient recommendation that I think every pharmacist should understand the science and recommend every time. Recent research on omega-3s. If you're low in omega-3 fats, it's as bad for your longevity as smoking.
Oh, my gosh.
You want to get that.
Yeah.
You really want to get that, right?
Yeah, that stuff kills you. The other thing.
Yeah. Well, not having enough omega-3 kills you, too.
Yeah.
So I'm like, dang, you're going to get a recommendation for first sardines. If you don't want sardines, here's a great fish oil.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
You eat,
and trust
eat
me,
the
you'll
right
sell
things.
A lot of fish oil.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think anybody's trying to choke down a bunch of sardines on a weekly basis by any means.
Well, actually, I have had some people that have routinely put those in. So, and in Spain, that's like every meal. Because it's built into the culture.
Yes, I went there once, and uh-huh. I was so, I'm not gonna lie, grossed out because I'm like, I'm not eating this. But now I realize I was just ignorant. So.
And they have the longest longevity almost of the planet.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so again, my game isn't how many scripts can I get you to take.
Sure.
My game is that vitality and longevity for a long time, and so. That's where I started. That's where I'm confident. And then I just have educated my staff over time and continually educate. Like we're in the process of getting everybody rebooted and trying to build their foundational knowledge. But I have some fantastic pharmacists that are all engaged with this and understand the clinical approach. So We sell a lot of supplements, and we are known in our community for that quality and the understanding. And we're conservative with supplements because we know that they are a poor substitute to the other components of lifestyle and diet.
For sure. So you're kind of known in the community. You've done a really good job, I think, of like, sure, come to this for expert advice. And we have these products if that makes sense, if lifestyle changes aren't working, but also through the lens of longevity and overall health and probably just improvement, quality of life improvement as well. Like that's where you're, when you're going to Dr. Kathy's pharmacy, there's that angle too, I imagine, in the community.
And that brings us a little bit to the whole branding and marketing, because when you say pharmacy, you don't think health. Mm-hmm. You think disease, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You think, I've got strep throat. I need to go there to go get my, that's what you usually think.
So that's the branding of our profession right now. And so I am branding myself as a wellness pharmacist, a wellness pharmacy. And there's a lot of question about the term wellness, and rightly so. You don't have to have any credentials to be a wellness practitioner, and that's fine. But you got to have some credentials to be a wellness pharmacist.
Yeah, fair.
Right? And the term pharmacist is trustworthy, smart, clinical. A wellness pharmacy, I want people to go, what the heck is that? Mm-hmm. And to me, that's someone who actively helps you delay the onset and progression of disease.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
And so that's my new-ish marketing of branding of my pharmacy. And I keep tweaking it towards that direction.
That makes a lot of sense. And the nice thing is the word pharmacy has a great base in it. You're like, I know I can go there for help. Right. Like,
right.
That's the one thing I always think about. From my perspective, I know I'm a little biased because I'm probably too in the industry to pull from pulling a market. But I do think there's an element of a lot of patients just go, the one super accessible healthcare provider I can usually go get help from. So that means you throw wellness in there with that. At least in the community world or independent community world.
That's changing in the industry.
Okay.
Our profession has been hijacked.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
There are a lot of patients who are forced outside of our community centers, our community health hubs, our pharmacies that are independent. And they're forced to go to these pharmacies that aren't pharmacies. They're dispensaries. I mean, they're just dispensing. And so I have a lot of people that don't have that thought of a pharmacy anymore.
That's fair. Like I said, I'm a biased patient. That's all I usually tap into.
I get.
But you're 100% right about that. Yeah. Go spend the time in another, I'll just say, large pharmacy. And just
understaffed.
An understaffed place and with a ton of volume. Like, no time.
I want to say one other thing. So I had the opportunity to visit with a really esteemed researcher. He was a researcher on longevity. And he was looking at super aging. So people that live to 120.
Okay.
And he had 12 things that he identified were common to these people. And what was interesting is the first two, they all drank and they all smoked. That was very interesting.
What?
But they all grew their own tobacco. So it was a very different kind of smoking.
Okay.
So that was that.
Okay.
One of the things he said that I went up to him afterwards, he said they all had access to healthcare when they needed it. And often the healthcare was alternative. So I ran up to him after the talk. And I said, you said they had access to healthcare when they need it. How often was that a pharmacy? And with not even a thought, he goes, every time. He said every time they had a first line pharmacy experience, and often the doctor didn't know what to do, so he'd tell the pharmacist to kind of figure something out.
Okay.
So around the globe.
That sounds like European a little bit.
Very much.
Yeah, or Mediterranean a little bit. Is that like
everywhere.
They hit those pharmacies almost first. Like it's like the first, like that's the first provider you go see.
Are the people that live the longest. So if you look around the globe, it's not just Europe. It's South America. It's Africa. Okay. It's because that access to that first line is a coordination of care, It's a connection point. It's love and connection. Mm-hmm. And I think that's being dismantled in the United States. And I think our life expectancy could potentially be directly correlated to that dismantling.
Oh, wow. How do we fix that? How do we do that? Is that legislative? Is that legislative efforts? Well, is that pivoting from an industry perspective, profession perspective?
I think it has to be, but I also think we have to retrain the consumer. The consumer has been hijacked to think of health is in the pill bottle.
Oh, fair.
Right? And they're starting to question that because of the internet and the availability of information, but they don't see pharmacy as a solution in the current model. So I actually think it's a rebranding of the profession, and we'll talk about that at some point. I think we have to have a strategic rebranding of who the consumer sees pharmacy as. But
yeah. Yeah, we can stay on that a little bit. So you're saying there's really not a strong, at least in our environment in the U.S., not a strong correlation or association with pharmacy. And then I do feel like there is some lift in, hey, look, if you'll change your lifestyle in some way, it's just as sometimes you get off pills, you get off that stuff. I do feel like that's coming back a little bit, but yeah. You're right. Mm-hmm. You're right in the sense of, I do think, the word association with pharmacy and that movement probably isn't as strong as it should be.
Right. And here's the difference when you look at the different people doing lifestyle. Uh-huh. And there's some great, loving, supportive practitioners. They ain't pharmacists.
Right.
7 out of 10 Americans are taking some drug, pharmaceutical, that is designed to manipulate the biochemistry and the metabolic process. I love nutritionists. I work with nutritionists. Absolutely love what they do and who they are. Pharmacy can do nutrition. Nutrition cannot do pharmacy. Mm, yeah. Okay. So there is a advantage clinically and in outcomes if we are the ones that lead them through this process.
Mm, that makes a ton of sense. Also, it'd be great if you could figure out too, although their patients will pay a cash model for that. A whole effort to get insurers, payers, the like to recognize those solutions and pay for those as well.
I don't think you'll ever have the direct insurers do that because they're currently being paid on a diagnostic model, mm-hmm. and a transactional model. So, I mean, there's some talk about value care, but they're not really into the game.
It's not any better than it was 10 years ago, right?
Right.
They're not interested in that. And I might be uneducated, everyone, so come at me if I'm wrong. But
well, they're transactions.
Right.
They get paid on transactions, so the more transactions, the better. And in our current system, you have to have a diagnosis to actually access those dollars. So I think we're going to have to address the consumer directly, powerfully,
okay.
and loudly. Then you go to employers, and then you go to catastrophic insurance.
Okay.
Right? But the game needs to be before the diagnosis. And the problem with before the diagnosis is our current system requires a diagnosis to tap into dollars.
Yeah, to tap into dollars. That's your, I guess, gated wall you got to get through is get a diagnosis first is kind of the way it's built.
So I had a gentleman, November of 19, who had an A1C of 11.9. His blood sugar is very high. By February, it was 6.6. And by March, it was normal at 5.6. And his wife did my program. Okay. His wife did my program, but she extrapolated it into their culture, their life. She cleaned everything up as we went along. And she brought me all his labs to see that. So I was having that conversation, and I shared that with a catastrophic insurer.
Okay.
And I asked the insurance guy, and I knew he knew the answer because those guys know money. I said, how much was that intervention worth? And without a thought, he goes, $400,000.
Holy smokes. So like that journey that patient, you helped that patient with to them is worth $400,000.
To them, $400,000. That reduction in A1C. So pharmacy's fighting for a $10 dispensing fee.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And catastrophic are trying, they're the ones on the hook for these big stroke, heart attacks, cancer, sure. early delivery. And they're saying, you know, that was worth $400,000. So we've got to stop doing bad business with bad people and start actually doing business with people who want those kind of outcomes. Middle insurance doesn't want that kind of outcome. They don't care. I mean, they really don't. I don't see that they care, because if I do that, I'm keeping him off of insulin. I'm keeping him off of a hospital visit or a stroke.
Yeah, the transactional revenue engine that's feeding it at the moment. Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, and again, the people that do care is that wife.
Yeah.
And the employer.
Yeah, and the person on the hook for them ending up in the hospital with a stroke or having to amputate something or something like that because of continued bad health outcomes. That makes sense. So I kind of feel like, all right, that's one place to start. Actually, I was thinking employers is the same thing, especially your self-funded folks, right? That are like, hey, look, you have to have a solution for them though. They don't want to craft it for you, I imagine, right? Like that you got to kind of bring a fully baked solution to them for the most part.
And that's part of my challenge, because I'm me. And that's why I'm trying to build this network of pharmacists that kind of think this way and can provide these kind of products. That inertia of our lives of trying to, you know, fill more. We've been in this fill more prescriptions at a loss, and we've got to stop doing that to create the opening for us to step into these spaces with integrity. And when you go in, I mean, I was talking to a city manager not that long ago, and I said, dude, you'd do better to pay your employees an hour a day to exercise. You'd have a better return on your investment than what you're doing on that 7% increase on your premiums and having no improvement of health. And he was like, okay, we're going to be calling you in our budget. We're going to put you in our budget. You know, so that's those kind of conversations that you have to customize for these employers.
Right. Yeah. And to kind of loop back to what you said, I know you said you're an introvert, but you can't be that introverted to go have those conversations, right? That's getting out in your network, understanding your community, really understanding the problems in your community too, and being able to speak to those and not being afraid to speak to those, or you having or creating the room and time to do it. That's an effort.
The inertia.
As well.
I mean, I had to block my inertia. I had to hire somebody else. I had to work after hours. I had to do a lot of this stuff to navigate this. And while I'm an introvert, what the other part of my personality is, I'm a very high supporter. Mm-hmm. I mean, I will go to bat for you. I will become Dr. Kathy for you, right?
Right.
I will be on podcasts. I will write a book. Those are very difficult things if I looked at the big picture. But because I'm such a supporter and a supporter for my grandchildren's grandchildren, mm-hmm. I will be uncomfortable and do those things for that to occur. And so that's the other piece of that puzzle.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I know you're speaking at a lot of places, and you teased, I wanted to, if it's appropriate time to tease this out, let's go ahead and do it. You said something kind of intriguing to me, patient versus customer. I'd like you to expand on that if you're willing to.
I'll try, because it's still a conversation that I'm teasing out in my own mind.
Okay.
And I'm asking and inviting everybody to send me their thoughts on it, because it's just going to help me further articulate this. As a pharmacist, as a medical professional, I have a legal, moral, and ethical relationship to my patients. Okay. I swore that.
Yep.
I have a liability, and I manage that with utmost integrity, right? Ethical, moral, legal.
Right.
PBMs don't have that.
Okay.
PBMs don't have that. They have customers. Insurance doesn't have that. They have customers. Okay.
Okay.
So pharmacy has done a great job of taking care of the patient to our own, at a loss most times.
Yeah.
Right. We have managed and maintained and have incredible success with managing the patient. I think where I've been weak, and I think pharmacy's been weak, is recognizing that customer relationship. And where I'm thinking of it now is I have to manage the customer until they become a patient, right? And we've always just never had to worry about customers because we had so many patients just being sent to us or coming to us based on our ability to take care of them. Well, that's not the world right now. The okay. customer is being competed for, everywhere. Amazon, everybody's competing for the customer. Nobody is having these people that are snatching the customer. Mm-hmm. They don't have to deal with the patient, right?
That's fair. They look at this as I'm going to go get 6 scripts.
Right. Mail order.
This is an asset mail order for me. Yeah.
So the people that are making the decisions about the dollars are doing it through a customer lens, not a patient lens.
I see what you're saying now. Right.
And I think that's part of how we're being taken to task. Because we're not fighting for the customer. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like I said, I'm not exactly clear where we need to go with this, but I think that is part of the dilemma that nobody is teasing out.
Can I expand a little bit? You tell me if you feel like I'm going on the right way. I'm going on the right way. So I think what you're saying is pharmacists and owners that operate community pharmacies tend to look at this as, I signed up to take care of patients. I really didn't sign. Like, if we make a good living doing it, fantastic. You can tell a lot of pharmacies and pharmacists have figured out how to break even doing it, and doing it at less and less revenue per customer or per script at times, just based off the PBM drive. So what you're saying, I think, a little bit is go, hey, you probably should have an eye on the profitability per customer as well. And that's not a bad thing to say out loud.
No, not at all.
Okay.
You know, in the 70s, a gentleman who used to be my landlord in this spot, they've had a pharmacy in this spot since the 50s. And they said in the 70s, there was a 55% gross margin.
In pharmacy?
And in pharmacy.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
Okay.
And I heard somebody say that his dad put 4 kids through college doing 20 scripts a day in the 60s.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Margin is what has you be able to take care of the patient.
100%.
So I actually, no margin, no mission, no profit, no pharmacy. Mm-hmm. That's the reality. And what I said to my staff or to myself about 10 years ago is, do I want to do $5 million a year at 10% margin or $2 million a year at 50% margin?
No offense, $2 million sounds way less stressful. There's way less stress in that probably in a higher margin than 5 out of 10. That just is.
Yeah. And smaller pharmacies probably in that $2 million is a little bit better care than that crazy $5 million, mm-hmm. right? That inertia of walking into 500 scripts to fill and the pressures of that. How about I fill them in such a way that the ones I'm profiting on, and then I actually work on those the other components that will generate margin, but for me, they got to generate health, right, as well.
Sure. Outcomes and margin. You don't have a model without both, right?
Yeah. Like. So that's been my focus with the business strategy in my pharmacy is the $2 million 50% margin. And I guarantee you the supplement shop is probably thinking something like that.
Oh.
A restaurant, their cost of goods, 30%, their labor, 30%. So I think as you go into this kind of a strategy, it's a different metric than 11% payroll or,
sure.
These things. It's a different service model. It's a different pharmacy model.
Yeah. Okay. So y'all heard it. Dr. Kathy asked for help. Give her help. Like send her a comment, send her a note. Where can people send you a note? Where would you rather? You're on LinkedIn. You're all over the place.
I can hide from anybody. So no, Kathy at Dr. Kathy Says is my direct email.
There you
K-A-T-H-Y
go.
At drkathy.com. Or you can just go to the website, drkathysays.com.
Cool.
And send me a note.
Send her
be
a
happy
note.
To
Give her your
out.
Feedback. I think that's interesting at the different lens of almost a metric in the pharmacy where you're thinking about added, almost like value of patient, like margin of patient adds, right? Like things like that, like you're almost incenting in some way. I don't make the meaning this all about money and profit, I guess, but like you're incenting, hey, look, higher margin adds in the pharmacy with the staff, maybe even, and going, cool, that's a metric we're going to look at as we add new patients. Let's add higher margin to those, or figure out a way to add margin and outcomes with the lens on outcomes too. So,
well, and you know, like I said, no money, no mission. You've got to have that profitability.
It's a system
and
we're in.
The other thing is people just need help right now.
Yeah.
They need help and they want to pay for help that is of value. The problem is most of the pharmacies I've talked to don't have a product that patients can buy that is help.
Yeah, there's not like a clear solution, right?
Yeah. And so a lot of that margin dollars, there is a chunk of that margin dollars that I'm getting from those appointments.
Yeah.
That's why I always tell pharmacies over and over and over again, do you have the ability to sell your expertise?
Right. Yeah.
And if the answer is no, there's some inertia there that needs to be disrupted.
Right. And there's channels to do that. There's more than one flavor of that.
Yeah.
You just got to be able to probably package it well. That's easily digestible for a consumer, I imagine. I say consumer, patient, customer. Whatever language we want to use there, it's got to be easy to understand and acquire.
You have to sell the value first before they become. That's the thing. I think we have to see the customer and the customer experience before they become a patient. I know for me, everybody that walked in my door, I just related to as a patient. And that's not actually accurate.
Okay.
So I think if we can potentially maybe distinguish that may give us more access to maybe different strategies to stabilize the business.
Yeah. And different, like I would even say different types of patients too. Right. Like okay, cool.
One other thing is I think this conversation at the government level, because they don't distinguish between customers and patients either.
Okay.
Right.
That's fair.
I think that potentially this conversation needs to be distinguished. It's kind of like a fiduciary responsibility. Everybody talks about that with regard to money. But what about the patient legal, ethical, and moral responsibility that we have that we're not talking about? That our competitors, the ones that are manipulating the money, they don't have that responsibility. They're not being paid for that. They're not burdened by that. They can do things that we would never do and we don't do. So I think there's another place for that conversation as well.
You're not wrong. The state levels, like let's look at Medicaid, a lot of unhealthy patients there, right? Where I think independent community pharmacy, you could make its almost like largest impact at times, financially anyway, for the outcomes-based approach. Yeah, their contractors don't have that responsibility, though. You know what you're saying? Yeah, so you're totally right about a state-level approach of top-down. It's got to think that way.
Yeah,
Okay, cool. That's good. That's good. So in the pharmacy, let's go back in the four walls here a little bit. I got a couple questions here. I've been trying to ask everybody this quarter, the first quarter. We're kind of in the middle of the hard part with the cash flow crunch perspective. But what are you and your pharmacy thinking about in Q1 so that you're having a successful Q2 and Q3? What are you working on? Where are you spending time or spending money either way to make sure you know, 24, no issues and even improvement from last?
Well, we're definitely in a strategy, try not to go under kind of a strategy. We really started last March, February. Not losing money is the first thing.
Okay.
I don't have enough cash to fund the PBMs. I just don't.
Right.
So I'm not going to do it. I'm going to have really authentic and transparent conversations with my patients. They can handle it.
Yeah.
They want me to be here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're going to want to support me, and I'm going to give them opportunities to do that, be that have them call legislators or have them potentially do a cash versus something else. You know, we have the ability to do that. So I'm giving them solutions.
Yep. Okay.
So we're not losing money. That's the number one thing.
Number one. Okay.
Then we're focusing on creating products that will generate margin. So that may be the weight loss, that may be the supplement sales, that may be classes that I do, that may be in direct-to-consumer consultations and building. I just got contacted for a bed-to-med type program we're evaluating, but we're not. Okay. And then I'm working on potentially subscription models of health.
Okay.
So we're looking to find margin, and that's everybody's focus. So not lose money, manage inventory incredibly well.
Okay.
I don't need anything extra on the shelf.
Right.
Be proactive in our management of patients. So I don't want to get to where we're not having a lot of reactive
dispensing. Can you spend a little more time in that topic? That trying to peel back what you're thinking there.
Yeah. So that's sync. So that's okay. Predictable type is proactive workflow.
Yep.
Reactive is, here's my 10 scripts. Will you fill them right now?
Mm-hmm.
We want to just, you know, keep building those relationships and more effectively craft the solutions for the patients, because that's going to make our staffing more efficient. That's also going to allow me to utilize my staff to potentially build other areas, like potentially compounding, or go out and market, or learn more on the supplementation. You know, there's just maybe work on social media strategy. So it's try not to lose, and then work to leverage your dollars into more dollars, however that looks.
Right.
Be it. And I haven't had to cut. I haven't cut salary. I haven't cut payroll, but I have shifted them to the other ways of making money.
Got it.
So being as efficient as I can in the dispensing allows me to put these people in other areas, possibly my diabetic shoes,
mm-hmm.
possibly going out and continuous blood glucose monitoring type of approaches. So these other health-related margin-producing activities we've been able to shift to.
Okay. That's
my basic business 101. That's, you got it all right there. That's all I know.
That's Kathy's Q1, everyone. What's yours? Well, good stuff. All right. That's really good advice. There was so much there that you could spend an hour talking about almost all of the things you just listed, for each of those topics. That's really cool. Well, I think I don't want to use up too much of your time. I think we're almost at time. Is there anything else I didn't cover? So a couple things I wanted to say before we go, and then I have another segment we got to hit, is you're speaking at AAP next week. So folks, this won't be out by then, will it? I'm getting a no. All right. Sorry. We'll put it in there. You're speaking at Connect. Thank you for that. Y'all got a little bit of a tease of what that's going to be like. It's fantastic. You'll learn a lot from her. She also has an on-demand class, if I remember right, with NCPA as well. So
yeah, it's still available. It's Creating Health, Pharmacist-Led Lifestyle and Weight Management. So yeah. It's a great overview.
Mm-hmm.
The book's a great overview.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not written for pharmacists. It's written for patients, but I highlight the value of the pharmacist. I am committed to creating a partner in health network where patients know where they can go to get help.
Oh, cool.
Right.
Okay.
And we partner with them in health, and we partner with each other in health.
Yeah.
So I am working to create that network. And it's a consistent body of knowledge, a consistent delivery. So I'm in that process of figuring out how to do that. So I encourage everybody to stay tuned for that and to really think about that. So I talk about that in the book.
Okay.
I often say in the book, if you're putting any chemistry in your body, you need a chemistry expert on your team, and that's a pharmacist.
That's right.
And so I am aligning pharmacy to this mission, and come on guys, we can do it for sure.
For sure. That's why my pharmacist in that I use all the time is just Josh. So I say just Josh. He says he's not qualified half the time nowadays. But hey, we're all right. I feel like that's the best I got access to me. I'll just call Kathy now. Sorry, Josh.
And I am creating some mini courses on my website.
Oh,
such.
Okay. On the Dr. Kathy website.
Dr. Kathy says, that's my challenge for myself this year is to create some on-demand kind of classes that aren't the 7.5. They're small ones on like body composition. And as I tease this out and give specific training to pharmacists so they can go right in and start utilizing these. So that's one of my goals for this year is to create that some of that content.
I always feel like I'm not doing near enough when I talk to you, Dr. Kathy, but that's all right. That's it. Nobody can keep up probably. I see you're talking, speaking of body composition, is that an in-body
it
behind
is,
you over
is.
There over your, it looks like my left shoulder from looking at you.
Yeah.
Over there. All right, cool.
Yeah. They're a great partner and they're really getting excited about what pharmacy could do, of course, in their business model, but out in with health. And that's why I worked for 8 years to get them to pharmacy and they finally showed up and they're like, oh my gosh. We are powerful clinicians and we are perfectly positioned in communities to really help people. And you talk about point of care testing. That's a point of care test.
Yeah,
right.
I've used one of those before. It is insane how much data you get back.
It's fabulous.
Off that.
Fabulous.
So, okay. All right. Before I let you go, we'll do a section called, I don't know if anybody's prepped you for this, called prescribables. I don't think anybody has. But what I do is just ask our guest, what are you reading, watching? You can't take the book because that's mine right now. What are you reading, watching, listening to, doing right now you think someone who listens or watches this should check out? It could be fun. It could be work or both.
You know, I have to always work on my business acumen to be able to stand up and go toe-to-toe with these guys. I mean, I have 3 degrees in science. I don't have the only business I ever formally took was the history of economics, if that tells you anything. So
not forward looking, really.
That doesn't cut it. That doesn't tell me anything about a balance sheet at all.
Right.
So actually, right now, I am consuming for the second time Negotiations.
Okay.
And
you're probably in the middle of them pretty soon. Hopefully.
It's Chris Voss, I think, and it's a
love that book. I love that book.
I forget the name of the book, but it's great.
And never split the difference.
Never split the difference. That's it. It's a great book, and it's a great insight to our own triggers and just a lot of human stuff, which I think. And I know for me, I'll give it away. Pharmacists just give it away. We never have to talk about money. We never have to negotiate our value.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I sold my program for $1,400 to that woman, and it created $400,000 for somebody else. So my negotiation skills, I need to amp up a little bit, right?
fair.
I want to get a piece of that.
Fair point.
So I'm looking at that, and I always want to be able to be to partner with Integris business people to help on that side. But I ultimately want to be a clinician and I want to lead people to health and I got to find some business guys that help me do that.
Right, right. And no margin, no model. I think that's what
you're saying.
That's right. You don't have it. You don't have a model. Cool. Good. Yeah. Great book. He actually did some seminars. I sent some folks to those here. He stopped through Dallas one time and I sent a couple of folks. It was great. Great book. I agree with you 100%. My prescribable is this book, everybody. And for the listeners, it is Obesity, The Modern Famine by Dr. Kathy Campbell. Go read it. Go buy it. You can get it anywhere. Get it at Amazon. Get it wherever you want. But it's available everywhere. I'm reading it now. So that would be mine. Fun-wise, though, the other one I would say that I'm watching right now is... what's not Jack Reacher? Is it Reacher? The Jack Reacher series. Just finished it up. Great series, FYI, if you want to watch it.
That's fun.
But good stuff.
That's fun. I will ask a little ask is if you read the book and you like the book, please give me an Amazon review. That's part of this new game of being an author.
Yes.
That seems to highlight the value of the book. So let's get some good reviews out there.
Yeah. Helps with the algos for sure.
If you don't like it, just send those to me, but just, don't put it on there.
She gave you her email. So if you don't like it, you got tips for her.
Tell me all about it.
Sure, send her an email. If you love it, send her a review. It helps with the algorithms for sure. It lets everybody else get informed about it as well. We'll include a link in the show notes for the book too, by the way. Great book. Go get it now. Hardcover and paperback now. But Kathy, thanks so much for being on. Love you. Love having you on every single time. I feel like I learned so much from you. The industry needs more and more folks like you. Appreciate you spending time with us today.
Mark, it's my pleasure. I always appreciate the collaboration with Pioneer and what you guys are doing for independent pharmacy. Wow. It makes a big difference.
That's why we're here. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Bye, everybody.